I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fellow time travelers, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways. First off, big thanks to all the people who support this series, those who keep the wheels on the wagon by signing up to my patreon.com site. It's the money coming in from there that makes everything else possible. That's the long and the short of it. So if you're one of those who makes that contribution on a monthly or an annual basis, an enormous thank you. If you're not a member yet, it couldn't be easier. If you'd like to be, just click on the link attached, go to patreon.com and look for me by name and go through the steps. You'll be walked through them. Part with a bit of cash. It's cheaper if you join up for a whole year at once, but you can pay month by month if that's the way you want to go. It's all fine by me, and everyone's welcome. As well as supporting what we do, you get advance warning of exclusive content. There's a Q&A available for members where you can ask me questions, and I answer them in as close to real time as Paul and I have been able to organise it. You get a first look at my monologues, there's competitions, but there's also a family. There's the opportunity to be in touch with everyone in the group and chew the fat. So I'll hope to see you there one way or another. It's now time to strap into the time machine as we set off towards the next stop in my love letter to the world. Recorder, microphone, action. A huge crowd is gathered, hoping to hear someone crystallise the dreams of millions in the face of decades, centuries of inhumanity. Standing before them, dressed in a crisp white shirt and a black suit and tie, the speaker sets his prepared speech to one side. He clasps the podium with both hands and speaks from the heart, delivering one of the great speeches of the 20th century. Endeavouring to understand history in hopes of illuminating the future, I'm Neil Oliver, and this is my love letter to the world.
Morning, Neil. In the last episode, we travelled with you to Nagasaki in Japan to see a single almighty explosion lay waste to a whole city. Where are we this week?
Hi, Paul. Hi, fellow time travellers. Yes, in last week's episode, it was August the 9th, 1945. And we witnessed an event that brought the Second World War to an end with the horrifying power of a single atomic weapon. This week, it's 18 years later, it's 1963, and we're marching with up to 500,000 people as they converge on Washington Mall in the capital of the United States of America. We're with Baptist minister and civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr. as he gives voice to his dream. We're in the Washington Mall in Washington, and it's the 28th of August, 1963, which for people of a certain vintage and of a certain, I don't know, inclination to a worldview, stands out as a moment. And we're dealing specifically with a contribution made by Martin Luther King Jr., who was a Baptist preacher and civil rights activist. Surely everyone with an interest in history knows who Martin Luther King Jr. is. And people will also have heard, you know, that key line about "I have a dream." Those words, part of a speech he made that day, which are graven in legend. It's iconic. It's iconic amongst icons. So as I say, it happened on the 28th of August, 1963. Washington in the summertime, hot place. Physically, you know, temperatures up. It was 87 degrees Fahrenheit at noon. It was the March on Washington. It was all part of activity in support of new legislation being proposed by the JFK, the John F. Kennedy administration, to redefine civil rights. And in advance of that legislation, you know, making its final progress through to Congress and all of the rest of it, there was a march on Washington. And as is inevitable, there was to be a load of speechifying. Everyone and his dog was getting up to speak. And I mean, as it happened, Martin Luther King Jr. was 16th on the list on the official programme. So he wasn't top billing. Most of the speakers before him, the 15 people speaking before him, had all overrun their slots, because that's what people do when they get up to speak in front of crowds. They either freeze and say next to nothing, or they run off at the mouth and go over their allotted. I've done it many times. There's a recurrent thing in this podcast. I'm always saying numbers are hard to be precise about, be it death tolls, be it... people taking part in battles, be it people turning up at protest marches. But it's so vague that it's estimated that somewhere between a quarter and half a million people were on the Washington Mall. Buses and trains, a lot of them specially scheduled, had been arriving in Washington since dark o'clock. I mean, even before the sun rose, people were turning up. The march had all come to its climax on the Mall. But because of the heat, and because so many people had been speaking for so long, there had been a bit of a drift. People had begun to, have enough, and they were thinking about doing other things. People had drifted towards the shade of trees. You know, the big, long reflecting pool? The endless long water feature on the Mall in Washington. So a lot of people were congregating there where they could kick off their shoes and socks and put their feet in the cool water to try and cool off. So, you know, to say that the energy had gone out of the occasion is an understatement. You know, people were just a bit over it. It had been a fantastic day for people watching and celeb spotting. It's worth pointing out that the crowd was something like 4/5 black American people and 1/5 white and whatever, other races. So it was very much a black American gathering. And many, many were the famous faces. You can list people like Sammy Davis Jr. was there, Sidney Poitier, Charlton Heston, Marlon Brando, Josephine Baker, Harry Belafonte, Marian Anderson, Odetta Holmes, Mahalia Jackson, so big musicians as well, Lena Horne, Joan Baez, Bob Dylan. You know, it was a who's who of people who were, you know, motivated one way or another to be seen as civil rights supporters. There were bona fide activists in the crowd as well. Rosa Parks, you know, another name written in legend. She of the protest on the bus. The Little Rock Nine people who had been targeted and had stood up to demand their rights as human beings, equal on the face of the earth and under God and all of that. So it was quite the day. The speakers were within sight of the Lincoln Memorial, you know, that gigantic statue of a seated President Abraham Lincoln. And after all, that was appropriate. really, because he had been the president who made the Emancipation Proclamation fully a century before, where he had promised freedom for all the enslaved black Americans. But there's just no getting away from it. The whole thing had started to collapse like a flan in a cupboard. And so what are you going to do? Who was going to re-inject any kind of passion, bring the whole thing back into sharp focus? You might say it would take another Gettysburg Address. That's what people said. But worth saying that the Gettysburg Address actually went over quite flat at the time. It was history that looks back on the Gettysburg Address and makes the fuss of it. People just kind of listened to it and moved on, got on with their lives. So all of that's the set, that's the setting. And Martin Luther King Jr. steps up to his turn on the podium, and he's wearing the classic kind of civil rights activist uniform, the black suit, white shirt, thin black tie. He's been up most of the night, possibly hasn't had any sleep at all, but so focused has he been on working on his speech. And the pages that he has in his hands are tattered, and anyone that can see them, they're scored out and overwritten and side notes, because he's been reworking it and reworking it and reworking it. And so he stands up to read from a damp rag of a speech. And also, remember, this is 1963, so there are no... We would go to an event like that and expect big screens, so that if you were way back in the crowd, rather than looking at the person, you'd be looking at a massive screen where you could see the face of the person. There was none of that there. So for most of the 250,000 to 500,000 people, he's just a dot. Who is that now? Oh, right, Martin Luther King Jr., very good. Which makes me think of, we've talked before, not that long ago in the scheme of things, about Mallory and Irvine's attempt on Everest, and how they went away from their advanced base camp, and then a bit later they were spotted by one of the team below as two black dots moving, just visible, just moving across the canvas of the white snow and ice, all but invisible. And it just makes me think that Martin Luther King is all but unrecognisable. So what's he going to do to stand out so that he might be remembered? So anyway, he starts to speak, and the opening, despite all the rewriting and all of the ideas coming in from his aides and his, you know, the people around him, his team, it's safe. It's pretty safe stuff. Stuff they've heard from him before, and stuff that's not likely to set the heather alight, as we say in the land of Robert Burns. So he's just going through it, going through the motions, working from his speech, his script, when nearby him, sitting down, just over his shoulder kind of thing, is Mahalia Jackson, the singer. And previously her singing had lifted, well, Martin Luther King's spirits as well. You know, she was part of his extended entourage and all of the rest of it. And she can be heard by those, you know, in close. She can be heard to say, "Tell them about the dream, Martin." And if he hears her, he doesn't do anything at that first suggestion. He just keeps on going. And so she says it again, a wee bit louder. "Tell them about the dream." So you can imagine what's going through his head. He's looking out at least 250,000 people, maybe 500,000 people. And now he's almost got a heckler. You're telling him to change tack and go off in a different unscripted ad-libbed direction. So it's a big moment. And he'd been telling them about the unfulfilled promises of the founding fathers, obviously, because in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, it was all about equality for human beings. But hitherto, it had always been about white people. And there was no equality for black Americans. He spoke about the fierce urgency of now, which is a good line, that the moment was upon them to make the change because of the potential of this legislation coming through. And then, okay, so Mahalia Jackson has said twice, and suddenly he puts down his pages, just puts them down on the podium. And he's a preacher. He was a Baptist minister. So he was used to the pulpit and the fire and brimstone stuff. So he puts down his pages and he grabs the podium with both hands. And he says, "So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream." And the words are out of his mouth. Now, it's important to note that he had used the words before. On lesser occasions, he had spoken about his dream. And his aides had said, "Don't do it." because they had suggested it was trite. Don't do it. So it's a bit like a gimmick. But he's off now. Where's he going? He's across the Rubicon, which we've also dealt with in the Love Letter to the World. He has crossed the Rubicon and there's no way back. And so he says, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the colour of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, one day right down in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today." So we've all heard it. It's good. It's good stuff, and it came from the heart. But the fact is, from the moment, even while he was still speaking, and certainly from the moment he stopped, it was apparent that his words and his sentiment divided the critics. Because there were certainly activists close to him who decried, shouted down the notion of dreamers at a time when the movement needed leaders. You know, we need affirmative action, not woolly dreams. We want, tell us how we're going to do this. What's the solution? However, that said, with the passage of years, it's generally accepted by most, or at least many people, that Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech that August day in 1963 ranks amongst the greatest speeches delivered during the whole of the 20th century. And it's in pretty good company there. So the Civil Rights Act, that was the bill, you know, seeking to enact civil rights, which would outlaw discrimination on grounds of race, but also on grounds of religion, grounds of sex, male or female, national origin. So it wasn't to matter where you came from. Once you were a citizen, we were all Americans. And it was passed by Congress the following year. So 1964, it went onto the books. And it was meant, and you'd have thought it would have meant, the birth of a new American republic, a new beginning. But we all know where we are, where we still are. At the moment, quite frankly, it feels as if we are as divided on race grounds as we ever were. And that increasingly, it is the done thing to judge people not by their character, but by the colour of their skin. You know, that absolute falsehood that people of a given colour are inherently better, more trustworthy, more intelligent, more moral than people of another colour. That nonsense, when any thinking person knows that it's down to the content of a person's character, that there are good, moral, honest people of all colours, of all creeds, of all religions, but that there are also baddies of every race and colour and creed and religion, and that there's no, that something you're born with, like the colour of your skin, is in no way a get-out-of-jail-free card. It doesn't define who, it's not supposed to define who you are. You are supposed, in that ideal world that civil rights legislation was all about, you're supposed to get where you are, to get ahead by the content of your character. and we're still such a long way from contemplating doing that. So along with so much else that comes out of the United States of America, you know, the unfulfilled promises of the founding fathers that Martin Luther King Jr. spoke to in his speech, it's still the case. You know, that the American ideal, the American dream is still possibly the best idea for a civilization that anybody ever had, founded on equality and freedom, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the notion that every person is to be regarded as a being of equal value, depending on how they actually behave and how they perform. But it's never happened. And in the United States of America, with the trouble and strife and all the violence in all the cities and the way in which that republic is actually falling apart, dissolving in front of our eyes, you know, proof if proof were needed that the potential of that ideal, that idea, that has not been reached. And at the moment, that ideal that surely any right-thinking person would aspire to seems as far away, if not further away than ever. It was ever thus. Since 1955, the USA had been locked in the space race with the USSR. The Soviets were off the ground first and well ahead. In 1961, the American president John F. Kennedy declared, "We will put a man on the moon and bring him home safely before the decade is out." The race to set foot on another part of the universe was well and truly on. Next time in my love letter to the world. To help support this podcast and to get access to new content every week, sign up to the Neil Oliver site on patreon.com. I'll love to see you there. I have a new website address. It's an easy one for these complicated days, neiloliver.com. Check out my shop for series merchandise, t-shirts and mugs and hoodies. My Instagram account is Neil Oliver Love Letter. My YouTube channel is simply called The Neil Oliver Channel, and it features new films every week. And to help build this podcast, tell your friends about it, get them listening, and write a review to convince the online crowd to join us. For further reading about these moments in time, you could try my book. It's called The Story of the World in 100 Moments, and it's published by Transworld. Neil Oliver's Love Letter to the World is produced by Paul Ratcliffe and Neil Oliver for Catnip Inc. Music is composed by Milo McKinnon. Social media and YouTube producer is Oscar CFR. Additional research is by Evie, Lucien, Archie and Teddy. Finance is by Catherine and Trudy. Post-production is by Squared Studios and the graphics are by Paul Plowman. Thanks for listening. This has been a Catnip Inc. Podcasts production.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.